Click.
We are. Welcome to the podcast. This is episode 22 on this lovely semi-overcast, almost gonna rain Thursday, April 28th.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing myself through this.
You're not?
No, it's weird.
Do we need to do over?
We might. Okay, 1 second.
Okay, we're gonna do over.
I'm just cutting in and out. It might sound funny, but I'm in an experimental mood today.
What's cutting in and out? We're still going live?
We're still going. I just picked it up where it went. I adjusted my levels.
Great. And, you got me like beatboxing probably.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It should be different. Yeah. Again, experimental mood
today.
So, it's April 28th, I believe you said. And
April 28th?
And what's been going on?
I don't know. All kinds of crap.
I got some stuff written down.
Mostly just like trying to get wedding stuff all planned.
All right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The inevitable wedding that is approaching.
Inevitable.
Yes. And a lot of it has just been dealing. We sort of found areas that we wanted to do it in. Mm-hmm. And it's just turned into a complete... It's just been a mess, like trying to deal with certain towns and certain things. Either you have to be resident in order to use certain things in this particular town that we've been looking at, or there was same town where we were looking at something else, and they were like, well, in order to use that, you have to file a petition and bring it up with the Board of Selectmen and go in front of them, and then they all vote on it. And it's like, really? This is like what happened to be like, oh, that's so sweet. You guys are getting married. Okay.
Everyone has that.
That's
why they plan these things, like, years in advance.
I know.
And hire wedding planners.
It's crazy.
And make movies about it, and people go nuts.
So I think we found our location.
Oh, good.
And then we just need to figure out what we're going to do for the reception. And all that good stuff. All that good stuff.
Fried dough.
Fried dough. It's going to be like a carnival. And we're going to have fried dough, and we're going to have chili dogs. So just that, just all kinds of, I don't know, it seems like all kinds of stuff. I'm trying to go through my little list here that I wrote.
Yeah.
As far as like the immediate stuff. We've got some concerts coming up at Studio 99 right here in Nashua, New Hampshire. It's Studio99.com, or is it, I can't believe I forgot
this. Studio99Nashua.com.
All right, Studio99Nashua.com. This Friday, we've got Matt Jackson, who I shot his album cover for.
Excellent.
And he's going to be performing this Friday night, the 29th, tomorrow, starting at 7 p.m. And his show is actually sold out.
Nice.
Completely sold out.
Excellent.
That's pretty cool.
Good job there.
Yes. And then Saturday evening, my buds from the Honey Ear Trio.
That's awesome.
Fine New York jazz. They're going to be coming back at 8 o'clock. Please go. Please.
I bought my ticket.
Did you really?
I bought a ticket.
Awesome. They're so good. The bass player is from the Michael Ballard and the As Is Ensemble, Renee Hart.
Who provides our
wonderful intro and outro music. Maybe I should... Yeah. And so they're going to be here tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday night. How many nights can I confuse with that? So Saturday night, the 30th, April 30th, Saturday night, 8 p.m., Honey Ear Trio, Studio99Nashua.com. You guys should all go. I expect to see everybody there.
Everybody.
Everyone. The professional quote. So that's going on. And then my first workshop is this Saturday, which the weather looks like it's going to be absolutely gorgeous.
Good.
So I'm very happy about that. And I've got a nice little group coming, and I've got the model locked in. Hopefully we'll be doing lots of location stuff outside because it's going to be nice.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Let's shake off all the cobwebs from the wintertime.
Exactly. I bought my new shoes, my new Keen shoes that I can start breaking in this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and comfy. Comfy.
Yeah.
What do you got? I'll skip some of my stuff and then we'll come back to it later.
What do I got?
What you got going on, brother?
I've been working on Return of the Affordable Website.
Affordable Website 2, Website Harder.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
Well, it should be easier. That's the point of it. Easier, but better. You know, lowering the threshold of effort on everyone's parts, but still delivering a quality product.
Yes.
So that's, but I think the holdback has been on a lot of the stuff that I do. Yep. Well, not that anyone knows what I do anyway, is that I don't describe it, and I just don't write about that stuff because I don't do the marketing writing. So I'll make something that does something that's cool, but you know, when it gets down to the point when I have to, you know, write a paragraph about it, I always keep putting that off.
Yeah.
So, and I think I've been putting it off because I was making it harder in my head than it really was.
Yep.
You know, it's easy for me to write about other people, so not so easy to write about myself.
That's yes.
A pretty typical, I think, thing that people go through.
That is hard.
Yeah. But then I got some inspiration from seeing a trailer for this 1990s movie called Crazy People. And I remember this one, I think it was in college. Yeah, I must have been in college then. And I saw this trailer on TV, and it was about an advertising executive that goes crazy. And he starts writing extreme truth advertising. And I remember this one pitch that was, Volvos, they're boxy, but they're good. And so he had a whole bunch of stuff like that in it. And I was thinking, what if I just wrote about what I was doing as, you know, just describing what
as
it did.
As simple and basic as possible.
Yeah. This, like, for example, this is a form that tracks your time so you don't waste it. and stuff like that. So, like, for the website, I've just been writing down, like, this goes here, this goes there, this does that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not horrible. And it allows me to just get by this whole thing. I need to make this thing of art. I need to craft the words to capture the very essence mm-hmm. of what I'm trying to do. Not only technologically, but but philosophically as well. So everyone's hearts can come together and sing. You know? But no, it just says, put the heart over there, take the picture of that, stick that there, and you're done.
Yes.
That's kind of how.
Is that where the I take pictures of people's faces thing came from?
No, that was just pure genius.
pictures of people's face. Pictures of your face. Yeah, that's the low-end marketing that I'm going to get around to next year. Just pictures of your face.
Pictures of your face.
You want a pictures of your face? Here's some pictures of your face.
Yeah. Or do you want a hot dog? We got hot dogs.
There you go. Yeah, I should have a little cart. It would just be like a little cart I attach to the back of my scooter, and I just walk around. I'll have like a carnival hat and a cane and be like, come on up. Everybody get pictures of your face. sir. You look like you used a new picture of your face.
No. How about a hot dog? Yeah,
have a box of peanuts.
Yeah. That would be an interesting competition.
Could set up a tent.
Yeah, we should organize a festival.
There you go.
Yeah, so
come and see the mysterious pictures of your face.
What does it take? I still want to go to wherever you go for this kind of thing and see what it takes to have like a hot dog cart. I'm sure it's like this gigantic like bunch of hurdles you need to jump through. But
I would imagine there's some sort of really super crazy clearancing process you need to go through.
Yeah, but how long could it take? Maybe it takes 6 months. Maybe can't do it this year. But you put together everything. You find the commercial kitchen that you can prepare in. You find out the temperatures things should be at. You go through certifications and then hot dogs.
The
and
Dave
pictures
Doug.
Of your face. It would be worth it.
The Dave Doug.
These are chicken sandwiches that I've been wondering if they would sell well.
Say Doug.
Like I was talking to Ashish, my friend Ashish, who I haven't talked to him in a while to see what he's been up to. But there's some kind of Indian sandwich snack thing that he likes. But he's wondered also if he could actually like convince the general population of Nashua to also enjoy
it. Well, what we should do is go to that chimichanga cart that they got like over on the tree streets, because that's just that little tiny weird,
right.
Scary wagon that we're all scared of going and approaching.
We should go there and check that out.
The Franks, the Mark and Kathy Frank, the people that own Renaissance Glass, they were like, oh my God, it's so good. You should go. And
really?
Yeah. And we always pull out the whole like, but it's when we're scared. We don't want to get accosted and stabbed and shot and killed, because that's our stereotype of the tree street area of Nashua. Like, I don't want
to
get killed.
Well, that brings me to the next thing that was on my list, which was like working through resistances.
Resistances?
Yeah. There's this guy named Stephen Pressfield, and he wrote this book called The War of Art.
Is he British?
I don't know, actually.
Is he like high society British? That name sounds high society British.
It's, if I said it in the
good
right
afternoon
way.
There, sir.
That sounds like
was it
Cockney pretending.
My name is
society.
Stephen Pressfield at your service.
Yeah. Well, okay. So if you imagine it with a posh accent like that, perhaps.
with a monocle?
With a monocle.
And a top
Stephen
hat.
Fry saying it.
There you go.
So Stephen Pressfield, he wrote this book called The War of Art, which is about facing down the resistances that like tear yourself down to prevent you from like making your art.
Uh-huh.
So it's a well-regarded book. And it's... one of the things he talks about is how like there's these things actively within us that feed us doubts, tell us we can't do something.
That inner voice you have?
Yeah, the inner voice that says you can't. And other subtle things. And the interesting thing about the book is he demonizes these things in such a way that they seem like tangible enemies within yourself that you then face down and then you take care of.
Huh.
So I've been like working on resistances of that nature, just noticing, well, so why aren't I writing the marketing copy? What's difficult about it? And then I will just kind of like, you know, name it and then like kill it. That was the idea. And there sometimes there are little, these little subtle things. For example, one thing I realized was a lot of the projects I don't get started on right away, especially the computer-based ones, because I hate hunting around my computer to find the right folder to click in. And so like, oh, it's got to be like 5 or 6 clicks.
What?
And it's going to be, what is it going to be, in this folder or this folder? I'm going to have to, oh, I gotta close this window. Oh, window's gone. And
resistance equals lazy.
Exactly.
It's like when I get up in the morning and I'm too lazy to go into the kitchen and make myself a sandwich.
I know. That's exactly what it is. But what's stopping you from doing it? And I would ask myself, why aren't I doing this? And then once I've gotten the shape of it and realize how ridiculous it is, or maybe it's not ridiculous because it generally is, I find it irking to have to dig through folders and find the right thing. Because I had to open like 5 or 6 applications at the same time. So, okay, let me open Photoshop. Okay, let me open the client contract folder. Okay, let me open the client contract current project phase folder and get the right output folder. All right, I need to get the source files. Oh, these are on Basecamp. I need to download these from Basecamp into here. It's a tedious, you know, thing. And then after that, then open up Illustrator. And now what am I going to do? I still don't know what I'm going to do yet. That's a lot of resistance. I mean, like, or I could eat a cookie.
Yes.
Or I could, like, surf the internet.
Yep.
So much easier. Exactly. And so that was the first resistance, is the tyranny of small things and getting beyond that. So, you know, it's not that bad.
That's a great quote. Forcing, the tyranny of small things.
I probably ripped it off from somebody. Probably like from Merlin Mann.
Tori Amos and her quote, Little Earthquakes. It's all those little earthquakes that cause all the issues.
Yeah, that's very sensitive sounding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because she's a sensitive artist.
No, that's why she's all adorable. Right?
That's right.
So anyway, the second resistance was actually just the ease of doing something that seems much more rewarding in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And especially not sinister, but it's the ones that really kind of creep up on you are the ones that seem like they might be useful. Like, oh, I wonder how this thing works on iPad development. Let me do a quick Google and see how that's done. And
then
you kind of go down this rabbit hole. Or, you know, let me just look at a few more example designs of how someone else has done this just to think about it while I'm eating my cookie. And stuff like that. So and I was keeping track of my time and seeing where it was all going, using I was just using Excel that day. And so, like, you know, I'm spending a lot of time doing speculative research, and that's not getting me any further. What I really need to do, if I want to focus, for me, focus isn't this intense kind of like laser beam attention. I already have laser beam attention. The aim just goes all over the place, all the time. For me, focus is just forgetting that other things exist.
Hmm.
And so then the only thing left is the thing in front of me. So that was that was how I had to approach that.
Yep.
So the second thing was like, the second resistance monster to kill was the, you know, let me not be distracted by things that are kind of interesting and are easy to fulfill.
Yeah.
The intellectual equivalent of, I'll just have a cookie. The bag's right here.
Cookie. You
know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
So anyway, Pressfield has a new book that's out that he's publishing through Seth Godin's Domino Project, which I think is some sort of mysterious end run around the publishing industry, because he's a big enough name now. Seth Godin, he wrote a bunch
of Ignore Everybody, marketing. Right? No. Is that Ignore Everybody?
No, that was you're thinking of
Hugh. Oh, that's Clown. The bald guy.
That's the bald guy, yes.
Okay.
He wrote the Purple Cow book, Tribes, his most recent one is Ship It or something like that. But he has a bunch of these well-worn tropes that are out there in the new economy marketing market. But anyway, so Pressfield has this new book, which you can download for free if you've got a Kindle or Kindle Reader.
Oh.
So GE is sponsoring that. So you go to Amazon.com and go to look up Do the Work by Stephen Pressfield. Click on the Kindle download thing, assuming you have a Kindle account. If you have an iPad, like, you can download Kindle Reader, I think. You don't need to actually have a Kindle device to read it.
Oh.
Well worth it. In fact, it's probably even a better introduction because it's short compared to Pressfield's longer work, The War of Art.
Huh.
So that's been in my mind. So I've been trying just to ship stuff out, just get stuff done.
Nice.
And yeah. So that's me.
Crazy.
You get a lot of work done. It's been feeling good.
Good.
Pounding stuff out.
Good. We've been dealing with all kinds of just weird stuff going on, like my car inspection. And
oh, yeah.
Although I did go and the scooter is all set.
Nice.
My battery is... yours is still in pieces in your basement. Did you register yet? It's all registered. Nice. I found out the battery that I had since I bought it from the dealership had finally died.
Yep.
So I ran down to... it's a place right here in Nashua over by Gold's Gym. Batteries Plus.
Oh, okay.
And they had it right off the shelf.
Nice.
So I got one of those, and then I went over and registered it the same day and got the stickers.
Yeah. I always go to the motorcycle place, like on that same street. RJ's.
Oh, for the batteries?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you buy a battery for the other one?
Yeah, I did, because I had not trickle charged it over the wintertime.
Yeah.
So it got below the certain point. I have a trickle charger now, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, good.
But... anyway, it's always fun to go to the motorcycle shop and say, I've got a scooter, and they kind of look at you.
Yeah,
but,
who let you in?
But it's got two wheels, so it's still kind of cool. And, you know, I feel like a desire to support the local cycle shop.
Oh, okay.
For whatever reason.
Well, I don't mind. I mean, I like it. I mean, especially now the gas is really close to $4 a gallon currently, mm-hmm. and I can't wait to get it. Like, hopefully it won't rain out a lot this summer.
Yeah.
So I can ride it around more often.
Yeah.
So I got it all registered and all stuff. My car is a different story. I've got all kinds of issues with my car.
Oh, no.
Blah, blah, blah.
So expensive.
Isn't it always?
Yeah.
And, past inspection, it's the emissions. There's something about everybody. Okay, so my engine light keeps going off, and everybody keeps saying it's this gas cap thing. Everybody keeps saying, like, this is Sarah mentioned it the other day, and this is the third person that said it. It's the gas cap. The gas cap sets. And I'm like, what is wrong with everybody's cars that their gas caps are sending off their check engine light?
Yeah, I've heard this too.
I'm going to bring it in on Monday. He's going to run another whatever through it. Yeah. And find out what this urban legend about why gas caps are causing people's cars not to pass emissions. I mean, is it a matter of drilling a hole in the gas cap or just buying a new gas cap or what is the problem? And if so many people know about, why has it not been taken care of yet? I don't know. But so there's just all that little junk that I'm trying to get done on the side. But there's all kinds of stuff coming up. Like, we are having our building, my building, the Picker building. We're going to have an open artist studio on Saturday, May 21st.
Cool.
From noon to 6 p.m. And I think there's some of the people downstairs are working on advertising and putting ads in the paper and stuff. I put an event up on Facebook. And you can learn more about it at pickerbuilding.com. But it's going to sort of be like an art walk, only it's just this building specific. It's going to be an open studios thing. We'll be doing the social media portraits again. So, come on by and have a picture taken and hang out. And, I'm going to try to hand out propaganda about the workshop. And if anybody has questions and they want to answers in person, they can come and ask about it. So it'll be kind of cool. Give us a chance to open all the windows and air the studio out a little bit, which will be nice. So that is on May 21st. It's an open studio, 12 to 6 p.m. Go to pickerbuilding.com.
Nice.
For more information. And what else is going on?
You were looking at that Chase Jarvis thing the other day.
Yeah, so commercial photographer extraordinaire Chase Jarvis. He's the guy that set up that Creative Live website where they do workshops for free. You can watch them for free, on the weekend that they're happening live. And then you can go back and purchase them afterwards if you want, digital backups of everything. So he did on his website the other day, he did a shoot for live. He just broadcast the entire shoot. He did a band called We Are Augustines. I don't know how you say the name. But it was really cool. He started at 1 o'clock, and he did an interview with them, and they performed live for a little while. And then he did a 4.5 hour shoot or something like that. And it was just completely broadcast live. They had everything wired up so that you could see him shooting, him interacting with all the people. And then they would do a direct feed right into his computer so you could see the images he was shooting raw right out of the camera. And it was really fascinating. It was really kind of interesting. I only know him as a sports photographer. And so watching him shoot a band, it was very similar to, I'm guessing, the way he shoots sports. He shot a lot of stuff. He shot a lot faster than I would shoot.
Yeah.
And I think that's because he's used to shooting, people jumping off things with skis, and you have to sort of get that. So he was shooting more, he was shooting a lot of movement with the bands. Like he was having them walk and he was having them move around. And he kept calling it the unmoment. He was trying to capture the moments where they weren't actually thinking about being photographed.
Yeah,
but it was great. He went through like four different locations. The really nice thing was that a lot of the stuff was either with one light or he did it all natural light. I think, I think everything except for the first setup, everything else was all natural light. So it was basically just him and a camera. And then with, you know, like the light that he had in this studio, he had these big windows and he was sort of shooting them in front of the windows and overexposing everything. So it was cool. It was cool to watch him work. And it was very interesting to see how he's he's got really good communication with the subjects. Like he just constantly is talking to them, even if he's just explaining what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he constantly was letting them know what was going on, which was kind of interesting. So I thought that was pretty good. So I sat here for the whole time. I felt guilty that I was watching it. And Sarah was like, no, that's like professional development. So it was good. And it made me feel a little bit better that, you know, it's you know, this whole thing that you're talking about with the small, the small resistances, like my head is the small resistance in this case. And I'm always like self, you know, I'm like, well, it's, and I think that's just, I mean, I think that's from a quote unquote fine art standpoint, because it's, you always feel guilty about what you do. At least for me, and I
wonder if that's trained though. I think fine artists feel they should feel guilty.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe because it's like, you know, it's like you feel guilty. Like when somebody asks you what you do, you kind of feel guilty. Like, oh, I'm an art photographer, and they're like, really?
That's not so much guilt as really? It is embarrassment.
Yeah, I'll get back to you in 6 months and see how it's working out for you.
So
there's this sort of So even when I do my work and when I do my shoots, it's always just like, oh my God, you know, am I boring the people? Am I okay? Am I doing all right? Is my work? It's just all, you know, you always think you suck. And that's sort of the big resistance is just self-doubt and just not having enough, feeling strongly that your work is competent. So it was good. It was good to see this. And you know, I think I do a pretty good job. I think I'm okay. Yeah. I think I'm on the right path. I think I do okay with working with clients. I think the one good thing that I have is that I can communicate fairly well with people.
Yep.
And I think that
no stopping you.
Like, dear God, shut up, man! What is wrong with you? So I think, and I think because I've got my sort of toes dipped in enough pop culture-y crap that I think I can sort of keep, you know, like film and comics and geeky stuff and sci-fi. And I think my only weakness is sports, and luckily I don't deal with a lot of people that come in and want to talk about sports. So I think I can keep conversations going. And then I think just in general, I'm by nature just kind of a goofball. So I think that kind of entertains them. As long as I'm acting like an idiot, it takes the pressure off of them about being nervous. So it was good. So I watched it and I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm doing a lot better than I think.
Always instructed to see how someone else does the same stuff that you do.
But he shot a mess load of, like, I was just like, dude, like he was shooting so fast he would have to stop and let the computer catch up. Like, you could hear the dude, his little assistant that was like monitoring the computer, and he was like, slow down. He's like, hold up, man. But I think that's just strictly from he shoots sports, so I think he's just used to like just shooting lots and lots of frames.
Yeah, he's probably not used to shooting tethered either.
Yeah, that's true. Probably. Yeah,
he has to wait for the USB 2.0 connection.
But it was good, and he busted. He did a bunch of. He did all natural. He shot digital. He brought his Hasselblad out, and he shot some film. He had this. He was sponsored by Polaroid, so he had this big giant Polaroid thing he was shooting, and then he would pull the Polaroids, and then he would autograph. He was going to autograph the Polaroids, and then he was going to like give them away to people on Twitter and that kind of stuff. Cool. So it was really cool. So it was good. It was like through the whole production, and you watched him break stuff down and set stuff up and move things around, and so it was very good. So he's a good dude.
So are all the photo blogs, are they a flutter every time he does something?
Well,
like this?
Know, it's interesting. The last couple of weeks, and I just dug up an old blog post and reposted it about the Hasselblad that I bought Sarah.
Yeah.
There has been over the last, I'm going to say 4 or 5 weeks, there are the beginning murmurs of a film resurgence going on. All of these sort of popular photographers that are on the web who have all of these mass followings. It's interesting because they'll mention, you know, be like, oh, I just bought a film camera. And then all of a sudden Twitter and the interwebs is full of like, man, I want to buy a film camera. I should get some film. It's film. Totally film. Film all the way. Know your roots.
Yeah, it's kind of the lo-fi movement that you see.
Like at first I was like, well, maybe it's just people reacting to the digital thing, but that's done and over with. Like that ended a long time ago. And it's weird because it's like, you know, you get these superstars that are on the internet, and they're like, you know, you should do this and use film, and I'm using film, and now there's all this film talk. Like, it's, I feel bad for all the film development places that just went out of business because all of a sudden everyone's like, now I'm going to buy a 120 camera and I'm going to process 120 film, and who locally develops that?
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. So, like, you know, I was digging through some old stuff, and I was like, oh yeah, like, I never get tired of, like, talking and hearing about how I got Sarah her camera and sort of the little touching story that goes behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought last 5 or so, like the last month or so, there's been a lot of film talk, like film cameras, getting film cameras. It's interesting. And as somebody that was raised on film, it's nice to see that interest sparking again.
It kind of is getting back toward that mastery issue again, too.
Yes.
In a way, I can see, like, photographers, like, wanting to... Well, to pull the I used to use film credibility thing. Like, I do this with 8-bit computers
right.
all the time. So it's like, you f***s don't know what you're talking about.
It's almost like, when I first did the first art walk, like, I had set all the film cameras up. Yeah. Like, we had the 4x5 all set up and the rail camera all set up and all that, like the Hasselblad. So people come in and be like, oh, it's like, you shoot film. Like, yes, I do.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of go away. And
there is that kind of, it does seem like more of a precious moment. Because you're limited in the number of shots that you have, and it's less easily corrected.
Right.
I mean, unless you have, like, a film scanner.
Yeah. When I do location stuff outside, I try to work as if I had, you know, six rolls of film or something like that.
Yeah,
so I have a limited.
Paid off well for you.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who's like, oh, I can be off by 2 stops and I'll still be able to save.
Right, and that was one of the things, too, when we were watching this thing. He was shooting, and the images that were coming out of the camera weren't exact.
Yeah.
And he was like...
junky looking.
Yeah, and he was telling the clients, you know, right on camera. He's like, well, don't worry, because we're going to go in and we're going to Photoshop the hell out of this.
Yeah.
So that kind of... I was kind of weirded out a little bit by that. I was like, you know, like,
his emphasis, when I was watching him, and he was talking about that unmoment thing.
Yeah.
I can see what he's talking about. Like, when I look at people's photography, I try to figure out which moment they're capturing, because you can usually tell.
Yeah.
There's some people who are trying to catch this moment, like they're aiming at something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this moment of balance or something. So a lot of people's, like, pictures are, like, very, here's the static moment that I wanted to preserve and capture.
Right.
It's like a still life. It has that feeling of it. But then there's other people who like to capture the moment just after that.
Yep.
Or the pictures that they pick. Or
the in-betweens.
Just before. The things that are in-between transitions.
Yes.
I tend to like the transition pictures.
Yep.
The ones in which you see someone's mind has gone away from the camera.
Yep.
As opposed to it's like focus on the camera or focus on looking a certain way.
Yeah.
You capture a certain moment and there's, you know, stiffnesses that go away and so forth.
Yeah.
And those are impossible to predict. Yeah, we're out of time.
Oh my God. What else? Do we have anything else?
We had Mark Cookson Art Commission 30 seconds ago.
We'll try to get him on so he can talk about that.
Yeah, you will try to do that. Do it.
And what else can we carry over?
I
think that's about it. I was nominated for a New Hampshire Business in the Arts Award.
Right.
And I think that's I think we can make the next podcast where I can talk about that. Because the thing isn't until the 16th.
What are we going to talk about with Mark?
Well, we can talk about the Arts Council.
Okay.
I just wanted to see if we can get a basic, like, what exactly an alderman does.
And
especially an alderman at large. Like, I want to know what he does and, you know, what... I don't know, because I'm not a big politics person. I stay out of politics.
Uh-huh. Is he kind of like Sherlock Holmes?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing.
He solves, mayoral mysteries.
He has we should get him a Sherlock Holmes hat and a magnifying glass.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be a great photo.
You know?
I'm surprised you don't just have one of these. We need to go look for one.
They just boost up all the stuff I have in the studio.
Yeah.
But, so I need to get down with it. Because there's a bunch of people that have shared their interest about coming in and doing it. So I need to start lining up.
You should mention that Kenta Koga fixed your
laptop. I was just about to say, we haven't mentioned Kenta Koga's name yet. Kenta Koga. Who, big props and a big thank you to Kenta Koga, because he helped replace the hard drive in my laptop last week.
Yep.
And poor guy had to, like, unscrew it and screw it back together, like, 8 different times.
That's because, why, like, I didn't want to do it.
Because we got it all in. But by the end, like, he had it. I mean, there's, like, 37 screws to take out of this thing. It's, like, super compact.
Yeah.
By like, the fourth time, he had it, you know, down to, like, a 3.5-minute process. But I got a new hard drive, and he was the only one willing to help me out with it.
Props.
So he popped it open and replaced it, and we brought some pizza over, and we hung out, and we listened to his brother swear at the Gears of War 3 beta, and it was awesome. But he put it in there, so thank you, Kenta Koga. Thank you, Kenta Koga. Kenta Koga. Kenta Koga.
Kenta Koga.
Kenta Koga. Kenta Koga. Somebody suggested we should name the podcast the Kenta Koga.
Oh.
The Kenta Koga podcast. Sid and Dave's Kenta Koga Or just call it Sid and Dave's Kentacoga.
Yeah, we should get him on. We need to get Mark Cookson on first because he's got dibs. But
yes.
So that's the podcast. I'm David Say, graphic designer.
I am photographer Sid Caesar. And we will see you later. Go to Studio99Nashua.com for all your loco music needs. Nice. Cut. Michael Bellar and the Azaz Ensemble, michaelbellar.com. Give him your love.